Hey, everybody, it's Andy. Welcome back to the Buckhead Church podcast. At the end of this episode, please take a moment to download the Buckhead Church app, where you can access all of our recent message content, as well as information about Buckhead Church. And the app is the easiest way to share this content with a friend. But most importantly, I hope the following presentation inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. So this week is a really important week in the life of America, and it happens every single year on this very same week. This week is the hinge point in the rhythm of American culture. This is the point in the rhythm of our culture. This is the point where we pivot from thankful for to I want more. This is where we pivot from grateful to a cart full, right? We spend one day being thankful, and then we look at a month where we get our fill. But the point of this is, it's not really all of our fault. We're all guilty of this as we transition from Thanksgiving to Christmas, but it's really not all of our fault. So here's what happened. 8 days ago, this is embarrassing, but we're friends. 8 days ago, I said, Sandra, don't throw away any catalogs. I want to use them as a visual aid. 8 days. These are catalogs that came to our house over the last 8 days. I don't know how there are any trees in the world, okay? And the problem is, I was perfectly fine with everything I had until these things start showing up, and they just multiply like rabbits. I don't have the right glasses, the right eyewear. I don't make the right kind of cookies. I don't have the coolest fishing equipment. I don't fish, but when I looked through this magazine, I wanted to start fishing. I don't make the right kind of cookies. I don't have a large enough television. I don't have a cool enough decorations in our home. I need a little more pottery in my barn. I don't even have a barn, but now I kind of want a barn so I can put pottery in my barn. Anyway, it just goes on and on. I look through these things and I just feel like the biggest loser, right? I'm not wearing the right stuff. Our house is so 1990s, everything keeps switching colors. And now, we're supposed to, it just goes on and on and on. And we're just constantly dissatisfied with what we have because we live in a culture that constantly reminds us of what there is. This is, if we're not careful, and this is why I want to talk about it for just a few minutes, this becomes pretty quickly the season of discontentment. Dissatisfaction with what we have and dissatisfaction with what we can't afford. And the realization that while we have food to eat, clothes to wear, transportation, music to stream, smarter than ever phones and flatter than ever televisions, this is the season where we're reminded that it all needs to be upgraded. Now, you won't believe this. Some of you are old enough to believe me. Most of you won't believe me. But once upon a time, this is crazy. Once upon a time, people used things until they broke. I know, it's crazy. I mean, who would do that? I mean, you're going to keep that thing till it breaks? Right. I mean, haven't you seen the newer one, the faster one, the cooler one? Yeah. Once upon a time, people in our country, they kept things until they broke. And then, get this, when they broke, you know what they would do with them? No, not throw them away. They would fix them. I mean, how stupid is that? Why would you fix something? I mean, the great news when things break is we get to get a new one, right? And then also, once upon a time, people would improvise. If they didn't have something, they wouldn't go get something. They would look at what they had, and they would use what they had in order to do what they needed to get done. Now, Sandra's dad, Bob Walker, is one of those guys. In fact, his iPhone 5S wouldn't hold a battery charge. This is this year, okay? His iPhone 5S wouldn't hold a battery charge, okay? And all the grandkids and all of us are like, get a phone. So you know what he did? He found online where he could buy a battery. He changed his battery in his iPhone 5. Who would do that? Smart people would do that. That's who would do that, right? Back in the day, that's what everybody did. And again, back to this, use what you have to do what needs to get done. A few years ago, he put some cameras in his many warehouses. He has many warehouses, and he bought the cameras, but he didn't have a bracket. But why would you order a $29 bracket for the camera when you can just take an old license plate and mount it on the ceiling? That's what I'm talking about right there, okay? See, it kind of makes you wish you'd thought of that. You have no idea what you might do if you quit thinking so much in terms of upgrade and just look around the house. Now, that's a bit unusual. He's a bit unusual, but he's an amazing person, okay? Now, my problem, and he didn't have this problem because he just lives his life differently. My problem is this: just about every day, I see one of just about everything I don't have. Just about every day I see one or a picture of one of just about everything I don't have that I didn't know that I needed until I saw it. And it just so happened that someone happens to know that I might also like. And that what I'm looking at is actually related to items that I've already seen. And somehow they know that customers who bought what I'm buying also bought. And that what I bought is also oftentimes frequently bought with other things. And they know exactly what I'm buying and how it goes with other things. So how in the world do you stay content in a world where everybody knows what you're buying and what you're thinking, and they just keep dangling it out there in front of you? And the problem, come on, if we're honest, the problem is not what we don't have. It's awareness of what we could have. And herein is one of the most important principles that you're ever going to hear. And it's certainly not original with me. And if you're not a religious person or a church person or a Christian person, this has nothing to do with religion or Christianity. But this is important. And this may save you down the road. So let me just throw this up here on the screen, okay? Awareness. Our problem is awareness. Awareness fuels discontentment. That's why I'm so discontent, because I know what there is out there. The reason you're so discontent with what you drive, where you live, how high your ceilings are, and what color the hardware is on your doors, and it just goes on and on and on, is because you're so aware of what other people have, and you're so aware of what's available. Awareness fuels discontentment. This explains why getting more stuff doesn't solve the problem. Getting more stuff doesn't actually make you feel like, oh, I'm full, I got enough stuff, right? It doesn't even reduce the appetite. In fact, it's just the opposite, because our desire for stuff is an appetite. And like any appetite, if you feed it, what happens to it? It grows. It doesn't go away. I mean, just because you've had a great meal, you push away from the table and go, I'm full. And, 3 hours later, you're looking through the refrigerator. Why? It's an appetite. And feeding it doesn't shrink it. Feeding it expands it. And I live in the same world you do, that every single day somebody's trying to feed that appetite, and I'm never fully satisfied. I'm never fully satisfied with what I drive, where I live, what I do, and all those kinds of things. It's just constantly being stirred up by our awareness of what's out there. Now, to be fair, there's nothing sinister about good marketing, and there's nothing sinister about great advertising. So if you're in the marketing business, advertising business, everybody's got to eat and live indoors, way to go. You're being super successful. So I'm not dissing an industry, but there is something unsettling about too much credit card debt, right? And there is something a little disturbing about not having enough savings because you've got so much stuff sitting around your apartment or sitting around your house. And there is something a little unsettling about not having any financial margin, because no matter how much money you make, if you don't have margin, you don't have financial peace, because peace is always found in the margin. And there's something a little bit unsettling about the fact that I've acquired so much stuff that even though I feel generous in my heart, I can't be generous in my checkbook because I've got so much stuff and there's so much more stuff I'm trying to get. So there's nothing wrong with marketing and there's nothing wrong with advertising. But there is a problem when it gets out of control and when the focus of our lives becomes the upgrade and the focus of our lives become what's next. Now, the other thing that you need to know as we talk about this is not all discontentment is bad. In fact, there's some good discontentment. If you have a bad habit and you are sick and tired of that habit running and ruining your life, and you decide, you know what, this is the year I'm getting rid of that habit. I'm so discontent with where I am because of the money I spend on this habit and what it's doing to my health. That's good discontentment, right? If you are sort of in a cul-de-sac in your career and you're just not going anywhere and you're thinking, I want to do better. I want to finish school. I want to get a master's degree. I want to get a different job. I need to move on with my life. And you're discontent with where you are. That's a good kind of discontentment. In fact, dissatisfaction and discontentment have led to some powerful things, some great things. In fact, discontentment has led to solutions for some of the world's biggest problems. The problem of poverty. Problems as it relates to hunger, joblessness. Illnesses have been cured because people were so discontent with the fact that what an illness was doing to a specific region of the world, they just focused their time and attention there. They just thought to themselves, this just can't be. This is not all right with me. People have found ways to create and find clean water in regions of the world where they need clean water. Why? Because they just thought to themselves, it just can't continue to be this way. They were dissatisfied with the status quo. There was a sense of internal discontentment, sort of a holy rejection of what is, and this idea that something needs to change for these people. But here's the thing. The people that change the world and the people that make the world a better place are not controlled by the discontentment that controls most people. The people that allow this discontentment to drive them to do great things, to make sacrifices, to move, to invest their lives and their talents in things that really aren't ever gonna benefit them in the long run. These are people who are somehow free oftentimes from the discontentment that plagues most of us. And therein is the secret of taming the beast. You tame discontentment not by deciding I'm not going to be discontent. It's not by deciding I'm from now on simply gonna be content with what I have. No, you have to replace it with something. And when you do, you will discover life. Now, to kind of flesh this out and just give us some handles, the Apostle Paul, 2,000 years ago, wrote a letter to a guy that he was bringing along to take his place one day, a fellow named Timothy. Many of you are familiar with the relationship between Paul and Timothy. He wrote a bunch of letters. Two of them survived, and they were included in the New Testament, and they're called, creatively enough, 1st and 2nd Timothy. There might have been a pre-1st Timothy, and there might have been a 3rd and 4th Timothy. We don't know. But these two letters survived, and they were included in the New Testament. And in this first letter to Timothy, 1st Timothy, the Apostle Paul makes some statements and makes some comments about contentment that are so powerful that I thought we should look at them for the next few minutes as we move into this new season in the year. And in fact, the first statement we're going to look at is so rich, it's so powerful that even if you're not necessarily a Christian, but you may believe there's some kind of God, I would suggest you write this down, maybe take a picture of it or find it later, and just let it sit somewhere for the next few weeks because it is packed full of goodness. Here's what the Apostle Paul writes to Timothy. We're jumping in the middle of a conversation. He says this, but godliness, we'll come back to that, with contentment is great gain. But godliness with contentment is great gain. Do you want to gain something? Yeah. He says, all right, let me tell you how to get more. Godliness with contentment is great gain. And the little Greek word great is where we get our word mega. You know, like mega millions, but it's mega, it's big. He says, you want mega gain? Yeah. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Now, godliness shouldn't scare you off. Godliness simply means godlikeness. So you're thinking, well, how can I be like God? That's a great question. The New Testament answers that question. The New Testament teaches, the New Testament authors write that if you want to be like God, the way that you can be most like God is by putting other people ahead of yourself. That godlikeness is being more loving. Why? Because God is love. So if God is love, the more loving you are, the more you put other people first, the more you let other people go first, the more you put yourself second, the more like God you are. That's the gospel. For God so loved the world because he's love that he gave. That God demonstrated he was for us. That's what love looks like. So godliness for us, in terms of us being godly, it's not being sort of weird or kind of this separate holiness. In the Old Testament, godliness was stay away from anything that might contaminate you. Jesus came along and says, no, we're changing that. I'm going to run toward the messes. I'm going to touch untouchable people, but I'm not going to get the disease. They're going to be healed. So everything got reversed with Jesus. So godliness isn't about staying away from something. Godliness is about engaging with other people in a way that helps other people. So Paul says, look, if you want to gain a lot, here's how you do it. You put other people first, and then you decide, you know what? I'm fine with what I have. I'm fine with what I have. To which we say, but Paul, we're Americans, okay? Our economy would collapse if we did this, okay? We're Americans and we're not buying it because we're so busy buying other things. So Paul says, well, I'm not finished yet. Let me explain. So the next word is for. Whenever you see a for in the New Testament, you need to ask, what's that there for? And it's there for so that you can understand what he just said. So here's what he says, for. We brought, this is such a big idea, so obvious we just rush right by it. For we, that's all of us, brought nothing into the world. What does that have to do with anything, Paul? For we brought nothing into the world. In other words, you were perfectly content. You were perfectly content before you got here. You were, remember that? I'm like, no, because I wasn't here. Exactly. You were, in other words, think about this. You were most lovable when you owned nothing. You were most cherished when you couldn't do a thing for anybody. This is Paul's subtle way, he's building a case, his subtle way of saying, you have value way beyond what you have. That you were of value before you owned a thing. So to grow up as an adult and somehow equate your value with things is a mistake because you brought nothing into the world. And then he gives us the corollary. He says, and, you know this, and we can take nothing out of it. You're not leaving with anything. In fact, you're leaving everything. Which brings us to a very disturbing question. In fact, I hope this question disturbs you for at least a month. It should disturb us our entire life. Here's the question. Other than stuff, because everybody leaves all their stuff. You don't get credit for leaving your stuff. Everybody leaves their stuff. Other than stuff, what will you leave behind? Other than stuff, what will you leave behind? You're going to leave behind your stuff. You are more valuable than stuff because you showed up without any and you're going to leave here without any. So somewhere in the middle, we get all caught up in stuff. But when you leave other than your stuff, what are you going to leave behind? This is a question that should just be front and center all the time. And if you allow it to be front and center, I make you a promise. It will curb your discontentment. It will curb your quest for stuff. You might become one of those extraordinary people who devote your life to something that has caused you to be discontent because of the way it's affecting and negatively affecting the world or someone in the world. Was there, to use Paul's terminology, other than stuff, what we leave behind, will there be any great gain? Will the world have gained anything because you were here? Will the community have gained anything because you were here? Are you just going to leave your stuff? And then Paul steps back and sort of toward himself a little bit. And he makes a statement to Timothy that you got to be careful the way you read this. And he says, Timothy, now, let me tell you how I'm applying what I've just taught you. And Timothy, I'm not asking you to do this. And I think he would say to you, I'm not asking you to do this. And he would say to us, I'm not asking all of you to do this. But I just want you to know I'm not a hypocrite. I'm practicing what I'm preaching. Let me tell you how I'm working this out in my life. Here's what he says. But if we, talking about himself and his traveling companions, Luke, who wrote the book of Luke, Gospel of Luke, traveled, Barnabas, he had a bunch of guys that traveled around. He says, but if we have food and clothing, we're going to be content with that. Now, he's not asking you to do that. I mean, Paul didn't have a family. Paul didn't have any, you know, official responsibility. He just traveled around. His life was in danger. He was stoned. He was shipwrecked. He was bitten by poisonous snakes. I mean, he knew any day of his life could be his last. So he says, I'm not asking you to take this to the extreme I've taken it to, but I just want you to know I'm practicing what I'm preaching. And I know what I'm talking about. Godliness, putting other people first with contentment, married to contentment. If you know what, I'm happy with what I have. He says, I'm telling you, I'm living this. It is great gain. Now, this leads us to another question, and that's this. What did the Apostle Paul leave behind? If godliness with contentment, which just seems so, you know, there's just not a lot to that. If godliness with contentment results in great gain, all right, Paul, if you practice what you preach and you went all the way to the extreme of just being happy with what you had and, you know, as long as you got food to eat and clothes to wear, I mean, how did that work for you? How's that working for you, we would ask the Apostle Paul. So let me ask you, what did the Apostle Paul leave behind? This should cause all of us to stop and reconsider our whole lives. Do you know what he left behind? He left behind letters that shaped Western culture for 2,000 years. Wow. Yeah, but what about your stuff? I don't have any stuff. I'm not choosing to leave behind a bunch of stuff. I think I'll just help shape the world for 2,000 years. Do you know what else he left behind? He left behind theology. I wish I had time to talk about this because I love to talk about this stuff. He left behind a theology that would eventually disrupt the Roman Empire. He left behind a string of churches around the Mediterranean rim that shaped how church would be done for Gentiles for almost 300 years. So Paul, what are you saying? Paul's saying, I'm just telling you, you want great gain? You got to take your focus off this stuff. There's nothing wrong with it. But the problem with this stuff is you'll get to the end of your life and all your life will be about is this stuff. And that's not bad. That's not morally wrong. It's not a sin. It's just, don't you want more? Don't you want there to be something left behind that's not a thing? If something were to happen to you today, come on, if something were to happen to me, what have we left behind? Wow. What needs to capture our attention? What do we need to become more aware of? Where should we shift the energy we have as it relates to how discontent we're going to be with what's going on in our world. It's a big thought, isn't it? You should read the New Testament. He goes on. He says this. This is amazing. Those, and this is convicting. Let's go to that next one. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap. Now, again, when we read verses like this, it's like, yeah, that's somebody else. Well, let's, before we rush by, those who want to get rich. In other words, those who are targeting wealth for wealth's sake. Those who are just, you know, I love, you know, progress and I love moving forward and I just want to acquire them. He says, people who make this their focus, in other words, people who are first in line in their own lives, people who prioritize themselves above everybody else. That's who he's talking about. He says they fall into temptation and a trap. Now, in other words, there are specific temptations and there are specific traps for people whose focus is more. And if I were to say to you, do you know what those traps are? The correct question would be no, because they're traps. If they weren't traps, we would know what they are, but we don't know what they are. And it's why you think, come on, you think this. It's why you think if you won the lottery, you'd be able to handle it. Now I could handle it. Now these other people, they wreck and ruin their lives and their families. No, but I could handle it. You know why you think that? Because you've never stepped into one of these traps. You don't understand the temptation that comes with wealth. And you don't understand the trap or the temptation that comes with the focus on accumulating wealth. And this isn't for rich people. This is just for people for whom that becomes a focus. And he goes on. He says, not only that, and temptation and trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires. This is a powerful little Greek term that plunge people into ruin and destruction. You know what plunge is? You're driving along, everything's fine. All of a sudden, there's no road. Plunge into the ravine. You're paddling along, everything's great, and you plunge into the rapids. You step off, you know, you think everything's great, and you step off a wall, and you plunge into the concrete below. He says, they think life's great, everybody's envious, everybody wants to be him, everybody wants to be her, and then one day they plunge into ruin and destruction. And his point is this, that unbridled discontentment, if you don't do something about this, it's dangerous. The discontentment is dangerous. It will plunge you into credit card debt. It will plunge you into a lease you have no business signing. It will plunge you into no savings. It will plunge you into no givings. Oh, I feel generous in my heart. I wish I could do more, but I can't do more because I've been reading these. It will plunge you, come on, it'll plunge you into more travel and less family. And one day you wake up and wonder why, you know, nobody's getting along and nobody wants to see you and they're just after your money and they're just nice to you when you're giving them stuff and you're thinking, how did I get here? You stepped in one of those traps. You fell for one of those temptations that you thought you would be too smart to fall into. Paul's going, look, I'm just telling you how the world works. And then he kind of repeats himself to make sure we're paying attention. He says this, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Now, nobody loves money, right? Wrong. Yes, you just can't see it. You might love money. You can't see jealousy in the mirror. You can't see greed in the mirror. And you can't see love of money in the mirror. So how do you know? Because he's saying people who pursue wealth, it's the number one thing. People who love money, it's a root of all evil. He's saying the same thing over and over and over to make sure we get the point. But how do you know if you love money? Because I've never met anybody that said, you know, I think the problem is it's my love of money. No, we say, no, I'm careful or I am ambitious or, you know, we have other words we use. Paul says, no, there's some folks, you just love money, you just don't know it. So how do we know? Well, here's some things to get you started. What are you willing to do for it? I mean, you're willing to do crazy things for things you love, right? Remember when you fell in love and you drove all night to see her, or you snuck out to see him, and you wasted all that money on this goofy thing he wanted or she wanted, but it didn't matter to you that it cost too much. When you love people, you just go to extremes. What are you willing to do for money? Who are you willing to hurt for it? What or who are you actually, what gets prioritized behind it? In other words, is there somebody at home that feels like they're competing for your stuff, competing with your stuff? Is there somebody at home and that you keep using this message? This is kind of a guy thing. Well, I just want to make sure you're taken care of when I'm gone. I just want to make sure you're taken care of when I'm gone. I'm just sure you're going to want to be taken care of when you're gone. So guys, let me just tell you what your wife and your kids are thinking. We just wish you go ahead and be gone. We just wish you go ahead and be gone. We just wish you go ahead and be gone. Because you're not here anyway, but we can't get your money. So we got you and your money, and it's not helping us. So if you're not going to be present and love us and be a good father and husband, then go ahead and get gone so we can get all that stuff you tell you want to make sure that we're going to be taken care of when you're gone. I mean, nobody believes you, Dad. I mean, we don't believe you. You like being gone. You like the thrill of victory. You like those cool dinners. You like famous people. You like it, and it's fine that you like it. But you've left us back here to compete with it, and we can't compete. And that just means you love something more than your family. And you might be one of these people who loves money. And you fall into a temptation. You've stepped into a trap. You're going to plunge into ruin and destruction. And you'll wake up one day in that stupid little cramped apartment by yourself going, how did this happen? And you know what you're going to do? You're going to blame somebody else. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. He goes on. Some people eager for money. Ready for this? Some people eager for money. Basically, he's repeated himself three times. You know, this is the third way of saying, if you want to get rich, you love money, eager for money. Want to get rich, love of money, eager for money. Same thing. Some of them have wandered from the faith and have pierced themselves with many griefs. What he's saying is this. You got so busy, you know, the church thing. You know, you got so busy, the God thing. Then you read a few books, and it's like, I've got to change my view of my philosophy because we're busy, because we got the lake house, we got the boat, you know, we got all this stuff going on. And he says, over time, if rich people aren't careful, they get so caught up in more and more and more and more and more that they change the way they even view God, and they wander from the faith. And then look at this, and they pierce themselves with many griefs. And let me tell you, when you pierce yourself with many griefs, you won't be aware that you pierced yourself. You will find someone else to blame. So he paints this very negative picture about you got to get a handle on discontentment because it is dangerous. And then he says, but let me tell you what to do. And he turns a corner, and this is the beauty of this passage, because he doesn't say, Timothy, just don't do that. He says, Timothy, let me tell you what to do. And if you do what I'm telling you what to do, you won't do that. But as long as you're focused on not doing something, you're going to have a not goal. I'm not going to be discontent. I'm not. You can't have not goals. My friend Adam Johnson, he's the lead pastor at Brownsbridge Church. He has this incredible message on the problem of not goals, that you can't just have a bunch of not goals. I'm not going to be like my dad. I'm not going to be like, and he says, no, you got to decide, what are you going to do? And the Apostle Paul says, it's not enough to say, I'm not going to be consumed by what I don't have. He says, let me tell you what to do. Now, ladies, remember, he's writing this to a guy, so don't be offended by this next line. If he were writing to you, he would change the terminology. Here's what he says. He says, but you, it's a contrast to Timothy, but you, man of God, flee from this. Don't just stare at it and decide, I'm not. He says, no, look, you've got to change. You've got to pivot. You've got to refocus. You've got to become aware of something entirely different. And what is this? The constant pursuit of more. He says, you got to flee from something, and you've got to pursue something else. And here's what you pursue. But you, man of God, flee from all this and pursue righteousness. Decide, you know what? My chief pursuit is I'm going to do the right thing. My chief pursuit is to be godly. I'm going to put others first. My chief pursuit, I'm going to become dissatisfied if I keep putting myself first in line. He said, and pursue faith. That is, God created the world. God has a plan, this big, you know, overarching thing that God's up to, and an opportunity we have to participate in love and endurance and in gentleness. In other words, he says this, that contentment is found by redirecting our pursuit. That contentment is found not by, I'm not going to be discontent. I'm not going to look at the catalogs. I'm not. He says, no, you got to chase something else. Look up here. And if you do, in the end, great gain. Now, the other thing that's so cool about this, Paul's so smart, because before Paul became a Jesus follower, he was very wealthy and he was very successful. I mean, he was like the guy, you know, in Judaism. And he became a Jesus follower and he turned his back on all that. So he's been on both sides of this. And here's what he's about to say. He's going to say, look, this has nothing to do with how much money you have. This has nothing to do with how much money you make. This has nothing to do with, you know, how your talent and your hard work and your opportunity and you know, stayed up late and you came up with that idea and you know, he says, there's nothing, we're not dissing people who accomplish a lot, or this isn't a negative thing about rich people. This has nothing to do with how much you have or how much you make. And here's why I say that, because then he addresses rich people and he says something surprising. He says, command those who are rich in this present world. And that's most of us. Okay, if you get these in the mail, that means you bought something from someone, which means you have extra. Now, I want to promise you, because I almost didn't bring all these. I don't know where all these came from. I mean, we don't even have little kids, okay? We don't play with Play-Doh. I mean, it's amazing the catalogs that show up, because if you buy from one store, you know, you're on these lists. But his point is this. For those of you with extra, for those of you, let me put it this way, who will get a box in the mail this week from Amazon with your name on it, and you don't know what's in it until you open it. That's who he's talking to, that group of people, okay? That you've never, ever gone into Home Depot or Lowe's or any store for the one thing and walked out with the one thing, okay? That's the one that you're not about to bend a, you know, a license plate. You're gonna buy the bracket, okay? The people with extra, you got money in your ashtray. Your car lives in its own house with windows, and some of you have shades, you know, electric shades for the car. Is that okay? It's your car. Anyway, so he's talking to those of us with extra, and here's what he says. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be, and we think he's going to say, not to be so rich. That's not what he says. He says, command those who have extra not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in their wealth. You know what this phrase means? It means don't place it out front. Don't allow it to be the chief pursuit. Don't allow it to be number one. And how do you keep something from being number one? You choose to place something in front of it as number one. Who put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. But, and it continues, but here's this, not just a not goal, it's something you can do. But to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Bet you didn't even know that was in the New Testament. Yeah, he says, God has provided this stuff for your enjoyment. I just want you to have stuff. I just don't want your stuff to have you. I want you to enjoy what God has given you. I don't want you to be so dissatisfied by what you don't have that you can't enjoy what you do have. I don't want you to be so driven by what's next you can't pause and enjoy what God has placed in your hands. Okay, but Paul, you got to be more specific. This is still kind of churchy for us. You need to tell us what to do. So he says, all right, let me get real specific, rich people. He says, Timothy, command the rich people. The rich people need some practical application. Command them to do good. Now, this is so unusual. Why would you have to tell rich people to do good? Because rich people are so busy doing whatever they want to do. You can spend a month of your life, 2 months of your life, a season of your life, and never do good for anybody else. Because you have so many opportunities to do things for yourself, for myself. Plus, wealthy people, we're busy, aren't we? We got stuff to do. I mean, we're busy. And if we're not careful, we'll be busy, 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 and it'll be all about us. And when we're gone, all we'll leave is stuff. He says, tell them to do good. Tell them if you're going to be rich. In other words, if they're going to overdo it, if people are going to be like, wow, look at all that. He says, tell them to be rich in good deeds. In other words, when somebody says, wow, she sure has a lot, the next sentence is, yeah, and she does a lot for people. Wow, he certainly has a lot. Yeah, and he does a lot. Wow, they certainly have amassed a lot. Yeah, but they do a lot. He says, if you're going to have a lot, you need to do a lot. You need to do more than the average person because you have more opportunity. And if you don't, it's not like God's going to send you to hell. It's just that at the end, you're going to be like poor people who have the same misguided ambition. You're just going to leave things. You're just going to leave more things, but you're just going to leave things. He's getting to the good part. And to be generous and to be willing to share. In other words, tell the rich people to develop a lifestyle of generosity, of doing, of giving, and sharing. Otherwise, they're just going to consume and hoard their way and have through life and have nothing to show. And then he gets to my favorite part. In this way, he says, in this way, in what way, Paul? In this way, what is this way? This way is by refocusing on doing good for others, by refocusing on godliness. I'm going to put other people first and other people's needs and other people's priorities ahead of mine. He says, in this way, by being content, deciding, you know what, I could upgrade, I can even afford to upgrade, but I'm going to choose not to. In fact, I think I'm going to take the $800 that it would cost to upgrade. I think I'm just going to give it away. There, take that discontentment. That'll teach you to try to control me. He says, in this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age so that, and then this is like the music changes. It gets big, it gets bold, it gets loud. This is so intense. He says, so that he's talking about you and me, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. He says, if you will wrestle discontentment to the ground, if you will refocus your awareness, if you will allow yourself to be bothered by things that really need your undivided attention, not just where you live, what you drive, what you wear, and all these things. He says, if you'll do this, Paul, who's been there, done that, says, I'm telling you, at the end, you will take hold of life that is truly life. You will take hold of life giving life. You will take hold of a life that is worth living. You will take hold of a life that leaves life in its wake and not just stuff. It's an invitation. Life becomes truly life when it's given away. This is how you leave something that's not just a bunch of some things. That is great gain. And this is why I remind you every chance I get. And you think, Andy, you just run out of things to talk about. I haven't. This is why I remind you every chance I get. Look up here. Look. The value of a life is always measured. It's always determined by how much of it was given away. Every funeral you attend reminds you of this. The value of my life will ultimately be determined and measured by how much of my life, how much of your life was given away. The value of a life, you know this, is never determined by what was accumulated and consumed or hoarded. So Paul's right. Godliness with contentment. It's a great gain. So come on, let's do this, right? Let's be different. Let's reprioritize. I mean, let's enjoy what we have, but let's not be deceived. Let's not step off into that ravine. Let's not be plunged into some horrible thing relationally or financially because we never got a grip on this. We've been warned. Awareness of what there is that we don't have fuels discontentment. But discontentment, according to the Apostle Paul, and you're smart enough to know this, discontentment is bridled by redirecting our awareness. So would you just, I ask you to do this all the time. Some of you have already done it. Some of you did it long before you ever heard of me or met me. So this isn't original with me. But I just want to ask you one more time. Would you please, 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 no matter what you have, no matter what you believe, would you please put someone or something ahead of yourself financially? Would you please put someone or something ahead of yourself financially? I don't mean you give them more than you keep. I just mean sequentially, they're first, it's first. Would you find an organization, or would you find a movement, or would you find some people who are doing something that stirs your heart? And would you get involved with them financially and with your time? Would you give first and systematically, not guilt, oh, it's that time of year, Would you give first and systematically to something that stirs your heart, or that breaks your heart, or that you feel like is making a difference in the community or a difference in the world? And if you do, you'll enjoy what you have, but what you have will never have you. And if you do, what you don't have won't bother you as much. And you will lay hold. It's incredible terminology. And you will lay hold of life that is truly life. Don't you want that? Don't you want to be missed? When they go through, you do your will, and you're leaving all this stuff. Don't you want there to be a group of people that may have never met you? They are better. They are better off because you were here. You're going to leave everything behind. I hope you leave more than everything. You're going to leave everything behind. I hope you leave behind more than things. I hope between now and then, you discover life that is truly life. And who knows? You may become one of those strange people who keeps things till they break.
Hey, once again, thanks for listening. If you're an Atlanta resident, I would love for you to attend one of our weekend gatherings at Buckhead Church. For directions, service times, and information about our fabulous children's and student environments, please visit us at buckheadchurch.org. That's buckheadchurch.org.